over 350 airstrikes on Ansar Allah, better known as the Houthis, within the last month. These strikes have killed high-ranking commanders, destroyed weapon depots, and pushed the Houthis to hide their arsenal deep in Yemen's rugged mountain terrain. The result has been a sharp degradation of their capabilities. And now, for the first time in years, there is the potential for a renewed start to the Yemeni civil war. There are reports suggesting that 80,000 troops are amassing under the patronage of the UAE in order to reinstall the government overthrown by the Houthis in 2014. Their target, the western port city of Hodeidah, a critical stronghold held by the Houthis, home to a million people and Yemen's lifeline to the sea. Backed by drones and fighter jets, the exiled Yemeni government believes it can now defeat the Houthis in open battle. And the stakes couldn't be higher. For Yemen's civilian population, this could exacerbate an already terrible humanitarian disaster in a decade already defined by bombing campaigns, starvation, and famine caused by naval blockades. But the consequences don't stop there. This offensive is connected to the negotiations between the Trump administration and Iran over its nuclear program. You see, this war in Yemen isn't just about Yemen. So how did we get here, and what might happen next? Let's dive in.
Well, yeah, we are going to dive into that. We're going to dive into that today, along with a couple other things, including reports I ended up getting out of Russia yesterday, out of Ukraine, all right, of chemical weapons, blister agents, in fact, being used against Ukrainian troops. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome on over to another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. Good to see you guys. And it's good to know everybody got their notification today. And apparently that's been a problem for quite some time. So we've got all that going on. So good morning, good morning, good morning. How are we doing today? Always last in line, coming in, gifting out of Speak the Truth membership. Greatly appreciate you, the friend. Stuff going on with Pete Hegseth. I was in a space last night over on Twitter, and it was after I did the live show, and I couldn't help but notice that everybody was paying attention to what's kind of going on here at the White House. We have the Democrats that are running down to El Salvador, complaining about a terrorist that got freaking deported. And the real question is what have we missed, right? Like every time you get told to look left, there's probably a reason you should be looking right. And the reason you should be looking right, you're going to find out on today's show. We have new strategic aircraft that are currently airborne en route over the CENTCOM AOR. In addition to that, we've got lots of different lift aircraft. Israel's opened up on Gaza and the Houthis down in Yemen. Their survival kind of depends on how the next couple days is going to go, and it's not looking pretty for any of them. But sounds like Putin, after the launch of all of this crap yesterday, and again, you got to understand what's going on. Putin reportedly today decided to come out and say that he's willing to do some peace talks and some negotiations. So how did all of that happen? How did this come to be? And what does the future actually look like? Because we can't basically rely on either Putin. We can't rely on Iran. We definitely can't rely on the Houthis. And we sure as crap can't rely on Hamas for accurate information. So what's actually taking place, and what's the U.S. strategy? What's it looking like? Matt is taking money stare department. I don't know what that means, man. I have not a single clue what that even means, but I do love the banana gang. You guys are awesome. We're going to take questions over here at the end. I'm going to end up playing this like a short 1 minute clip here that's got Pete Hegseth. And this is something that just kind of needs to be addressed. One sec.
When you dismiss people who you believe are leaking classified information, and again, the investigation is ongoing and that will take time, and when the evidence produced, it will go to DOJ, why would it surprise anybody, Brian, if those very same people keep leaking to the very same reporters whatever information they think they can have to try to sabotage the agenda of the president or the secretary? So once a leaker, always a leaker. Often a leaker. And so we looked for leakers because we take it very seriously. And we will do the investigation. Right. And if those people are exonerated, fantastic. We don't think, based on what we understand, that it's going to be a good day for a number of those individuals because of what was found in the investigation. So if they want to keep leaking and pushing and peddling things that try to sabotage the president's agenda, that's unfortunate. Right. But that's how leaking works in this town. We're focused on recruiting, on rooting out DEI, on securing our southwest border, on the president's agenda, and it's going very well at the Pentagon, and I'm proud of it. Right. When you dismiss people...
So he brings up a really valid point, right? That those people that ended up getting dismissed were because they're leaking intel, and that it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody that they continue to leak intel. And we ended up talking on that space, and I got to bring it back up. You know, we ended up talking on that space last night about some of the dumbest crap, and I finally lost my mind over it. I'm like, why are we paying attention to things like this, right? Why? when the reality is that the enemies of the United States of America have been stacking their cards against us for a while. And in my opinion, a lot of it, sorry about that, a lot of it, in my opinion, has to do with misinformation and disinformation that is coming out from overseas. It's actually a hell of a lot deeper than a lot of people realize and what a lot of it's tied into. Something that I ended up seeing earlier, right, when we start talking about misinformation, disinformation, and just causing instability and destability here in the country. I mean, here we go. Looks like this gentleman right here, okay, satanic plot against to assassinate Donald Trump. 17-year-old Nikita Kassip is only one of many patsies being groomed for a foreign terrorist actors to commit terror acts in the United States. And had the luxury of speaking with the individual that ended up writing that article and kind of going back and forth on a lot of the different information. You guys might remember her. We had her on the show last year. She goes by the name BX over on Twitter. If you guys have been around for a while, you might remember who she is. And I highly suggest you guys go follow her and go check her out. Here's the deal. What she's discovered, because originally it was like child sex trafficking and a bunch of other things, and what she's broke out, what the FBI has came out and mentioned about a particular group called O9A or the Order of Nine Angles, all this other crap, is a lot of that stuff is actually, shouldn't surprise anybody, a lot of those people that are doing these things, such as this gentleman right here on your screen, are all being tied back to like Eastern Bloc countries. And whether it is their attempt to pin it on Ukraine or Ukraine's attempt to pin it on Russia, whoever you want to believe, either way, it looks like there's a lot of foreign influence going on over here in the United States of America in an attempt to draw our freaking attention away from about a million other things. Why? What did we miss yesterday that actually took place? Well, this. Zelensky and Putin reaffirming, or excuse me, not Zelensky and Putin, Putin and Iran. Reaffirming a strategic partnership between the two countries. And it had a very, very key, how do I want to say this? Very, very key piece that even not a lot of people are paying attention to. Tom Tutal coming and gifting out to Speak the Truth memberships. Appreciate you, brother. And that key piece to this strategic partnership, number one, is a peaceful, okay, peaceful nuclear weapons, all right, generation. Excuse me, not nuclear weapons, nuclear power generation. All right. That's supposed to be part of it, to help each other generate peaceful nuclear power or help Iran generate peaceful nuclear power. When Nate Vance was on the show last week, we had talked about it. Who is going to, when the U.S. Strikes these deals with Iran, who is going to make sure that Iran is actually keeping up with their side of the deal? The IAEA said Iran has 600 plus pounds of 60% plus enriched uranium currently being stored. That is way beyond what they're supposed to have. Steve Witkoff tried saying that we only want them to have a 3.6%. Great. That sounds great. But how do we know that? Well, we wouldn't. And there's only a couple countries on this planet that are actually going to have the capability to go in and either A, take care of that crap, or B, reliably check on all of those different things. Russia would be one of them. And so the fact that Putin is now, A, wanting to come to the negotiation table could be a very good sign. You could look at this and you could say it's a good sign that yesterday Putin and Iran ended up having this discussion about a peaceful nuclear, you know, power freaking discussion. That's great. Or you could look at it as Putin is trying to help Iran develop nuclear weapons covertly or quietly. That's part of it. The other big part of it that should really upset a lot of Americans is the fact that they also brought up having a different banking system. I'm going to say that again. They brought up setting up a separate banking system, part of the freaking agreement, a separate banking system in which our freaking sanctions wouldn't be able to affect. Nova Estrella coming in gifting out 5 Speak the Truth memberships. Now, I am not a huge technological expert, especially when it comes to the banking systems. But what I do know is when we end up leveraging sanctions on countries like Russia and Iran, it does, in fact, hurt them. And we see that. And we see those effects over on the front line. But what Putin and Iran came up with yesterday is they don't want that to be a part of it. Now, the other big problem that goes into that is when we're talking about all of the other things that I said moving forward, that if Putin and if BRICS ends up getting their own currency, and originally it was supposed to be a cryptocurrency, now that looks like it's fallen through. But if BRICS ends up developing its own currency and stops trading on the U.S. dollar internationally, if all the BRICS nations just say, nope, we're not trading on the U.S. dollar anymore, it would have a significant impact on the United States' economy. I was able to sit down and go over the freaking numbers with somebody this weekend, waiting on, we're going to be writing the white paper and getting that out so you guys can take a look at it and it can actually get reviewed. 20 plus percent degradation in the U.S. dollar over the next 5 years if today all of the BRICS nations decided to stop trading on the U.S. dollar. That's massive. That would drive like most Americans into bankruptcy. That would freaking just destroy our freaking economy. That would screw us heavily. And that doesn't, like, it's insane to think about. And yesterday we saw Putin take one of the very first steps towards that by developing a separate banking system with Iran. And none of that ended up getting covered in the mainstream media. Why? Because we were too busy focusing on Hegseth and all of the other freaking false allegations that are coming out. And so misinformation, disinformation, things like that, that are distracting the American population. And this isn't me just like making crap up. All right. This is here, right? This isn't me just making crap up. This is stuff that's actually happening and taking place and moving forward this week. Now, General Kirilla is still on his way up over into the CENTCOM AOR, right? He is supposed to be going over to visit Israel. He is the CENTCOM commander, excuse me. He should be in the AOR. He is a CENTCOM commander. CENTCOM is the region that basically covers the entire Middle East, Israel included, Iran included, all of his other nations included. He's on his way over right now to go into Israel. Keg's breath, not Hegseth, whatever you want to say, Keg's breath. I see what you guys are doing there. He's on his way over there right now. And you guys, again, in the chat section, you guys just reaffirm everything that I'm saying. People are so worried in the chat about Hegseth and everything else. When I'm sitting here trying to tell you that Russia is about to like run you into bankruptcy and you don't give a shit. That's the problem. That right there tells me that all of the disinformation that Russia has done is working great. Working really good. Why is he heading up over into CENTCOM? Well, let's see here. Over the last week alone, it looks like we have had upwards of 25 C-17s flying into the Nevatim airbase over inside of Israel. That is a buttload. That is a buttload. 25. What the hell are we moving into Israel and why? We already know that we have everything down in Diego Garcia. We know we've got staged over in the Red Sea now, two strike carrier groups. We know that we've had freaking P-8 Poseidons that have been over there for a freaking while hunting for subs. We know that those strike carrier groups are going to come with nuclear capabilities. We know we've got the F-18 squadron over inside of Jordan. We know we moved A-10s. We know we moved an entire Patriot battery, or excuse me, entire Patriot battalion from PACOM over into CENTCOM. So we have all of those things that are taking place. And then today we end up getting the news that these suckers ended up arriving. Three from Spain, going up over, and look where they're landed at. Look where they're hanging out. These are the Boeing E-3B Century aircraft. Now, some of you guys might be like, Matt, why is that a big deal? What are you talking about? Why does these Century aircraft actually matter? Let me talk you through the capabilities of these things. We have roughly 16 of these things that are still in service. 16. And so we start talking about the amount of these suckers that we're actually moving and the amount of our strategic power, 30 to 40% of our B-2 bombers, for crying out loud, not to mention an additional strike carrier group to the Red Sea. When you start talking about the amount of stuff that is being moved in the Middle East versus what's being put out in the news, it tells a completely different story. What are these capable of? These are essentially airborne command and control stations, but they are way more than that. These are capable of coordinating ground efforts. These are capable of coordinating fires. They're also capable single aircraft coverage footprint. At 30,000 feet, it has a surveillance bubble larger than 120,000 square miles, or about the size of Poland or New Mexico. We just moved three into the Middle East. Three. These things have an operational range, excuse me, not an operational range, but their Doppler radar, all right, runs 360 degrees every 10 seconds, and it can detect aircraft more than 250 nautical miles away or 400 kilometers. It has a freaking crew of like 20, if I remember right, it's a shitload of people that end up sitting on this thing and end up controlling everything on the ground. It can remain on station for 8.5 hours. It can just sit there and loiter for 9,250 kilometers. It also has the capability of doing air-to-air refueling. It ends up covering all aircraft and stuff below roughly 29,000 feet. Excuse me, lower than the stratosphere. So greater than 29,000 feet. What we're talking about that we just moved over into that region is one hell of a freaking asset of the United States government. And we don't have that many of them. About 25%. Let's say one of them is not operational because of maintenance issues. So about 25% of this freaking strategic asset just got moved over there. So we're not just moving at 20 or 30 plus percent of our B2s. We're also bringing everything else that's going to coordinate with it. Now, they have a massive operational range. If we were to pull up a map of the Middle East and start plotting it out, and I could show you like left and right where all that stuff's going to go. What you're essentially doing is you're making each one of these probably or two different sectors that they're dividing it up into. While one is capable of controlling everything, you definitely want to have different freaking operations. And the way you can describe it is we're going to have a massive operation going on down inside Yemen, right, against the Houthis. And then we're also going to end up having a massive operation going on against Iran. Those are going to be two separate fronts, two separate theaters that will all have to take place at the same time. Because I'm about to go over the Gaza Strip and show you what's ramping up down in there. Easter Sunday, 8 C-17s alone. 8. C-17 Globemasters, Easter Sunday, 8. 8 C-17 Globemasters all landed inside of Israel. Again, why? We're moving all sorts of crap in there. Strikes against the Houthis are through the frickin' roof. Here's a look at some Houthi shit getting blown up. You want to see some stuff going boom? That is a lot of stuff, dude. They have been under constant bombardment. I actually have the stats for how many we've been running. All right, so the United States government over inside of Yemen, just in our air campaign alone in the last couple freaking weeks, has taken out between 500 and 600 high-level Houthi fighters. Estimated. Not like little peons on the ground, nothing. Strategic targeting of their command structure. 500 to 600. We've taken out missile system operators and drone experts. We've taken out all sorts of, we've taken out key leadership. You guys saw that in the massive freaking one that Trump ended up blasting out where we had what? 70 plus people that were gathered for a little shura on the ground there that ended up getting freaking schwacked. They were plotting how to take out US freaking warships. But that didn't turn out good for them. That's not going anywhere. And I don't think that the Iranian negotiations depend on what's going to happen to the Houthis. I think the United States government clearly stated what's going to be. As a matter of fact, we know from the leaked signal chat, that the Trump administration's plan is to reopen the Red Sea. It's a big deal. Now, I don't think Iran at this point is going to have any say in the Houthis. Why do I say that? Because of the amount of pressure that we're slamming into them. Tom B, a.k.a. Bones, got a recent promotion on Friday. Today is my fourth day, and there are times where it feels like I'm in over my head. That's what happens every time you get promoted, brother. Nobody, like, you know, very rarely do you ever feel like you are, like, at least for me throughout my career, every time I end up doing things, like, hey, I forgot to tell you guys, tomorrow morning, at, I want to say it's 9:30 Central, and then right around 10:30 Central Standard Time, I'm going to be on I-24 International News talking about this entire conflict. So I'm going to be on the English channel, and then I'm also going to be on the French channel. So if you guys want to see me on I-24 tomorrow morning, that's where I'm going to be. That means I'm going to end up running this live session bright and early tomorrow morning, right around 8:15 to 8:30. Central Standard is when I plan on coming on tomorrow morning. That way I can get prepped, and I can get there for the interviews for I-24. So I don't feel like I'm capable of doing that, Tom, but I am. And I look at you and I'm like, dude, you're capable than far more than you realize. That's now we're going to do this. I'm going to go from here and I'm going to bring you guys up into this region. All right. So we were just talking about Yemen right down in here. We were talking about Iran and we were talking about Russia and all that matters. And we're going to go up and we're going to talk about the chem weapons attack over inside of Ukraine and specifically what I heard about it, blister agents. We're going to talk about that here in a little bit. But right now I want to take you guys down because this is really the crux of the entire situation, believe it or not. Like when we start putting these things together, everything that's happening on the backside that we just talked about between Iran, the Houthis, everything else, your main trigger point for what's going to happen is here. Israel, if they go to launch an attack in Gaza, like an actual large-scale attack, and over the last 24 hours, actually 48 now, they've been bombing the living hell out of Gaza. They've been bombing the hell out of Gaza. They've been taking out key leadership and everything else, right? Houthis at the same, or not the Houthis, but Hamas at the same time has started to ramp up attacks on them. I want you guys to watch this video. Watch this. Check this out. This is over inside Gaza. That is a recent video that just got released by them not too long ago by Hamas over inside of Gaza. And the most important part of it, at least as far as I'm concerned, is this kind of opening scene right here. This one is the most important part to me because what you're seeing is a step up and an increase in the brazen attacks that they're doing against the IDF. They ended up having several mass casualty incidents over the last couple days. And that's a cause of concern for the Israeli troops that are staged inside of Gaza. I see Kevin Huff that says, to clarify, we have 31 E3 Sentry AWACS units. Okay. The figure that I ended up getting was 13 operational. So if we have purchased 31 in the past, maybe I'm mistaken. I'll go double check my facts. Appreciate you for bringing that up. This, however, is a cause for concern. Because what you're worried about right now, what you're worried about right now is all of these attacks that are taking place over inside of Gaza, and Israel's kind of sitting on it. We've got Ben Gavir that just flew into Miami yesterday to go have a meeting with Trump. He visited a gun store. And we've got General Kirilla, the CENTCOM commander, that has just now moved into or is reported to be traveling up over into Israel. So those two individuals are likely sitting back in order to coordinate all of this crap. Now, information also came out yesterday. The rumor is that Ben-Gvir is supposed to be delivering information to the Trump administration that specifically says Iran is lying to us and that they have zero intent of dismantling their nuclear weapons program. A lot of people are taking that as Israel is trying to basically screw us over when it comes to the peace negotiations just because they want Iran gone. No. Intelligence like that's very important. I don't think the EU wants Iran to have a nuclear weapon either. Hell, I don't even think Russia wants Iran to have a nuclear weapon. I doubt it. You'd be mad to think that you want the Ayatollah to have control over nuclear weapons. But if Israel has actionable intelligence, actual intelligence that shows that, you've got to kind of take it for what it is. Even if it's a 50-50 shot, which when I take all of the information currently that is publicly available about Iran and I end up throwing it into AI, just hear me out here. If I take that information, I just throw it into AI and I say, based on this publicly available information, here is this report from the IAEA. Here is this report from the IAEA. Here are these statements from Iran. Here is the facts. What is the probability of Iran having a nuclear weapon? And it tells me about 50-50. That's just on publicly available information. So even at a 50-50 shot, is that something that you want Iran to have the capability of? Ads are aggressive again, huh? Why does that always happen to me, man? Why does that happen? Let me solve that scenario real quick. I figured out how to get this sucker solved. Sorry about that. Just solved that problem, hopefully, for you guys. So even at a 50-50 probability of Iran having those nuclear weapons, is that something that we actually want? And the answer for most freaking people with common sense is no. That accounts for why we have moved so many assets into the region. And when you look at what Israel is dealing with right now, and their peace talks with Hamas have freaking gone, and Hamas is currently recruiting 30,000 new fighters, there is going to be a lot of pressure. There's going to be a lot of pressure shoved onto the United States to hurry up and get this crap over with Iran. Because the negotiations don't really matter. Here's a statement from a freaking Palestinian over inside of Gaza, right? This guy ends up coming out and speaking in English, and he's talking about the protests. Now, here's something else interesting that I found about these protests over inside of Gaza. I'm going to touch on it as soon as this man's done talking.
Again, speaking to you from the middle of the protest. Here, the young men and the participants are chanting against Hamas and against the rule of Hamas. They're chanting against the war, and they are demanding that the entire world hear their voice, that the war should be stopped, and that the hostages should be released immediately. They are sick of the war, sick of starvation, sick of being locked in a big jail called Gaza Strip. Thank you very much, and please pray for our protesters. Thank you.
Okay, so they're sick of the war. Good. Did you hear him denounce Hamas? I didn't. Sick of the war, sick of starvation, everything else. And we've heard a lot of freaking things end up coming out of here. But the one thing that he didn't mention, if you want to listen to it again, I'll play it again. I didn't hear him denounce Hamas, did you?
Again, speaking to you from the middle of the protest. Here, the young men and the participants are chanting against Hamas and against the rule of Hamas. They're chanting against the war, and they are demanding that the entire world hear their voice, that the war should be stopped, and that the hostages should be released immediately. They are sick of the war, sick of starvation.
Oh, sick of starvation. Hold on, wait for it. As this guy is complaining about starvation, I want you to look right underneath my face right here. And so I start listening to what some of these people are saying, and I start paying attention to what's happening inside of these videos, right? And what's that? Yeah, look at this fat guy. He's complaining about starvation while this is taking place in the background. Anybody notice that, or am I the only one, right? So the deal is that while he might say that we're sick of the war, while he might say that we're, you know, we're sick of starvation and everything else, all of those seem like very, very, like, easy talking points, if you will, for them to come in. And that leads into like the mentality of some of these people and what it is that we have to deal with when it comes down to them, right? Because it's not, like I told you guys, this isn't just a war like for physical terrain. It's also a war against human terrain, i.e. their minds. I saw this video this morning, and I think it's very important because this is also something that Israel has to take into consideration, whether or not they have these uprisings and everything else that's going on over there. Well, they also have to worry about whether these people are full of garbage and if they're going to actually follow through, like we have to worry whether or not Iran's going to follow through with its freaking nuclear deterrence. I want you to watch this video. I want you to listen to it because this is 100% the mentality. And then I'm going to show you exactly where this mentality comes from.
What's good, man?
Free Palestine.
From what?
Hamas, f*** you, Hamas. You I love Hamas. Hamas. Hamas.
Bro,
I
you love can't bother Hamas. Me. You can't bother me.
Palestine coming. No Israel.
What do you want to do with Israel?
Listen, one day, you know Palestine will be free, yeah?
What does being free mean? What does being free mean?
You know
are they locked
mean.
Up? Are they? What does being free mean?
You know what I mean. You know very well.
So
you know
say,
Palestine.
Say.
You know Palestine people come f*** you!
Bro!
You're pussy For me, I don't want Hamas in Gaza. For me.
You don't want Hamas in Gaza?
No.
because Hamas is responsible of the killing in Gaza.
No, because Netanyahu take Hamas like, oh, Hamas in Gaza, fight Gaza. I want Hamas not in Gaza, okay.
But Hamas is still in Gaza. We still have our hostages in Gaza. Hamas kidnapped people from Israel on the 7th of October and they're still in Gaza. What do you think about that?
Your grandmother from where? Can you tell me?
We're Jewish people. We are from Judea. This land before it was Israel, it was once called Judea.
Go back,
and there it is. The guy doesn't even know that he's currently talking about taking over Judea or where Judea is at. It's a lack of freaking education. It's a lack of everything. And that mentality that this guy has is one that a lot of the Palestinians still do, regardless of whether or not they say that they're sick of the war or anything else, whether or not they claim to be starving while there's fat people walking in the background. Why? How did that happen? How did that occur? It started from here. This video ended up getting released by the Israeli War Room today.
Palestinian Authority is radicalizing children, not in secret, in school. It is responsible for textbooks that erase Israel and glorify violence. This isn't just teaching, it's brainwashing. And it's the Palestinian Authority that allows it. It doesn't have to be this way. The Palestinian Authority could choose to teach coexistence instead of conflict, respect instead of resentment. Peace begins in the classroom. The Palestinian Authority must take responsibility.
Yeah, no kidding. You don't get to teach hate and everything else. So regardless of whether or not people are sick of the frickin' war or whether or not they feel like they're hungry, you still have to ask yourself, after that's done, after that's complete, what is going to happen? Yeah, re-education. It's a very real thing that needs to happen. And it can't come from the West. It can't come from frickin' like anybody really outside of that area. And so those protests that are taking place are extremely important. In Hamas allegedly is attempting to recruit 30,000 new fighters over inside of Gaza. Not to do anything, but to wage jihad, to go over and plant bombs and do everything else. Because of all of that, yesterday, Israel decided to start ramping up their airstrikes. Now, during the ceasefire campaign, Israel ended up allowing a bunch of bulldozers and everything else to go into the freaking Gaza Strip in order to get things taken care of, right? So that they could go in, hey, stop. Ended up allowing all of these dozers and stuff to go into the Gaza Strip so that they could, how do you want to say this, start cleaning up, rebuilding everything else. They came from a bunch of different countries, all sorts of places so that they could clean up. Now, what do you think the odds are that those dozers actually got used for their intended purpose? I don't think it's very good odds at all that they actually went to what they were supposed to go to. I think that it's a bunch of malarkey. I think it's all garbage. I highly doubt that those dozers went to what they were supposed to be used for. Why? Because we've seen it before. And because of that, some of the airstrikes that ended up getting launched over inside of Gaza ended up targeting these dozers. Israel is waiting to go in. They can't do shit. They're kind of locked in place. They can do some airstrikes. They can do things like that. But other than that, the IDF is staged in Gaza, ready to assault. Meanwhile, Hamas and all of the other militants that they continue to recruit from the PIJ everywhere else, all these other idiots, get to set up defensive fighting positions. And that's going to make it harder and harder and harder on Israel to eliminate Hamas. Yesterday, you had massive protests inside of Israel that were calling for a ceasefire to get more hostages back. And all of that sounds great. But the reality is, at the end of the day, what Netanyahu's weighing out is lives. The probability that they're still alive, number one, or that they're even going to be alive, if they're alive today, if they're going to be alive tomorrow, number two, because they continue to get shot in freaking tunnels, executed, raped. So what are the odds that even if we get them back, that those lives are somehow going to be worth more than the Israeli Defense Force lives? We're talking hundreds of people potentially being killed by allowing Hamas to set up DFPs, defensive fighting positions, ambush points, freaking mines, IEDs, all sorts of shit, house-borne IEDs, all of the dirty crap that we've seen over the last year. They're about to go ham because they're running out of equipment. Those are the other reports that are coming off the front, is that Hamas is running out of ammunition. Cool. So actually stopping the flow of supplies has worked. Locking down the Philadelphia corridor has worked. What's going to end up happening is Hamas is going to freaking throw everything that they can, the entire kitchen sink at Israel, and Israel cannot afford to let things like this exist inside of Gaza right now for Hamas to be able to use. And that brings me to the very next point. What the hell are we going to do about all this? Well, up over inside of Lebanon, we've got to worry about Hezbollah. Hezbollah that's been backed by Iran. Israel started ramping up their airstrikes against key leadership in Hezbollah. We saw the Lebanese government come out, I believe it was last week, and say that they're going to disarm Hezbollah. Hezbollah came out and said, absolutely not. We will not disarm. And who do they take their marching orders from? Oh, that's right. The Ayatollah. Their main freaking funder. And so if Hezbollah is saying we are not going to disarm, if the Houthis are going to continue to attack, and if Hamas is still going to exist, we might take out Iran's nuclear weapons capability in a negotiation, but we're not stopping or solving the problem. Iran still needs to get taught a lesson. Israel's well aware of this. That's why this airstrike took place on one of their freaking, like, Hezbollah's commanders over inside of Beirut. Check this out. You can see him. He's about to come barreling down the road. Boom, airstrike. And he's going to bail out the vehicle. And he's going to run. He won't run very far, though. Dead. Awesome. Well done. That's one hell of a strike. What's it look like afterwards? What's the scene? Everything else? I don't know if this is the scene, that particular one, kind of early reporting that ended up coming out, but I don't think it is. I think this is a separate one. Again, another airstrike reportedly coming out of Beirut. Those are Lebanese forces that are actually on the ground now going over and assessing, doing a battle damage assessment of the airstrike and cleaning it up. You got dudes walking around in hazmat suits and shit that was on fire, all sorts of crap. Great. Those airstrikes have been ramped up against Hezbollah the last couple days. So now we're going over and we're taking all of these little pieces of crap out. And again, the mentality that they're up against, that they're fighting, is this.
Yeah, Hitler was right, man. He's a good man.
Hey, genociding 6 million Jews, good thing?
Of course it is.
That's it. That's the mentality that they're fighting. So what the hell are they going to do? Well, I talked to you guys before about the freaking impact that all of this crap in the Middle East is going to do on Russia. It's going to be bad. Not to freaking beat a dead horse, but I know there's a lot of people in here that haven't joined the streams before. So if you haven't been here before, make sure you subscribe. The Houthis, when they shut down the Red Sea, end up cutting 75 to 80% of the merchant traffic off that normally goes through the Suez Canal. Prior to October 7th, 50% of all the oil traveling through the Suez Canal belonged to Russia. Now it's exponentially higher. And we're going to get those figures for you guys right now. They, Russia, have used that opportunity to sell their oil up over into Asia for cheap. It essentially prices out any other competitor on the market because they can't use the Suez Canal. They've got to sail their happy butts all the way around to Africa, which increases their costs exponentially. Now, that is a problem because when we sanctioned Russia, part of that involved their oil exports. Well, if they're doing business in frickin' Asia and other countries where it doesn't matter, guess what? They're still able to offload it. They're not making nearly as much as they could have in other situations, but they're still making a decent amount. With the threats against Iran underway, the threats against the Houthis underway, Russia's getting damn desperate. Damn desperate. Once we end up taking out Iran and we go after them, I am pretty damn sure that we're going to end up going after their freaking, drone factories and things like that that have allowed over one third of the aerial munitions that are flying across the border into Ukraine to come from Iran. So one third of their munitions plus all of their freaking monetary support is about to get taken out. One third of the area munitions plus taking out their freaking way of funding the war is about to get smashed. And yesterday when all of that happened up over here outside of Kharkiv, ended up getting reports of chemical weapons usage. And I started to get phone calls around 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon. Reports of blister agents being used on the ground. Unconfirmed at this point, still waiting on it. There's a lot of people that are saying that they're not blister agents. There's some people that are saying, nope, it was just riot gas, if you will. Shit's nasty. At a minimum, that shit's nasty, and it's still a war crime, even if they just use that. But the fact that Russia is now openly using those things, and it wasn't just a little one either. It wasn't like the little freaking gas canisters and things like that that we normally see in pictures, like the little hand grenades of them throwing riot gas. That's been happening for a while. No, we're talking about airburst munitions. Airburst munitions. Yeah, riot gas won't cause blisters. You are absolutely correct. And a lot of people are saying mustard gas. A lot of people are speculating on it. Long story short, people have to go and they have to document and they have to go over all this crap and figure out what happened. Did it cause fatalities? I heard absolutely it did. In contact with people who were directly on the ground rushing dudes to a hospital. Absolutely. What would that mean for the EU? And again, if you take a look at what took place in the news yesterday between Iran, between Russia, between Pete Hegseth, all of this crap is being covered up over here in the United States of America because the mainstream media is focusing on things that really don't matter. But the truth is, if that's actually substantiated, that means that NATO or the UN or the EU or the United States, somebody's going to get involved and go into Russia and start dealing with this crap. Fulminated mercury. Good question. They would intervene. Even if it wasn't, let's say it was just the riot gas, and we start getting reports of them using that all across the front line, those are all signs and signals that Russia is running out of patience. So now today, we get word that Putin wants to come to the negotiating table. He said publicly that he's open to direct bilateral negotiations to potentially end the invasion of Ukraine and pressure for both sides to agree a quick peace deal and continue to build from what Donald Trump and his administration had put forward. Officials from the United States, Europe, and Ukraine are set to meet later this week in London, where the Trump admin hopes to receive a response to a document detailing terms and concessions for the ceasefire from Kiev before eventually presenting them to Russia. Cool. So, we're going to see. Got about a week to go. 7 to 10 days is my current assessment before everything pops off at the latest. 7 to 10 days. I don't know what other assets we need to move into the area. I'm going to open up the Discord. I want to hear from you guys. I'm going to go in there. I want to talk to you guys about some of the stuff and, you know, the implications for everything moving forward and what you guys think. I also know we have a lot of Ukraine war vets and everybody else that are over here, you know. So I just went ahead and I opened it up over there in the Discord. So you guys, please, if you are a true supporter, you got to be a true supporter to get into the freaking Discord. The link is posted up over underneath the post on the main YouTube chat. And you guys are able to come up and we're able to talk about all of these things. And you guys can, by all means, come in and ask questions and we can talk about all the crazy crap and whether or not you believe that I'm full of shit. Or if you want to question anything that I presented, you're more than welcome to come in and do that. Looking forward to hearing from some of you guys. Hopefully Texas is in the stream today. Very curious to hear what he had to say about it. Talked to Nate Vance yesterday. He said that when he was in Ukraine, he very well believes that he ended up getting hit with that gas as well. Not the blister agent, but the riot gas. What do we call it? What do we call that shit? Tear gas while he was over there. He believes he ended up catching the tail end of it. It is like, well, documented over inside of Ukraine, the thousands of instances of gas being used against Ukrainian troops. It's a war crime. Thousands. And every time now, especially this one, big attack, America is focused on something else. Putin's trying to come out and say that we have some sort of freaking peace deal that goes in there. Brian, what's up, brother?
Hey, so I've been having a big question about this that I wanted to ask you last night. If it is proven that chemical weapons were used, what, if any, is the world going to be able to do about it, like punishment-wise towards Russia?
Well, I think primarily, number one, we have to get it confirmed. If it happened in the region where I heard it happened at, chances are we're not going to get the attack confirmed on the ground, but there's going to be other signs of it with the individuals. So the bodies of them, the bodies of those individuals, you're not just going to have to be able to do like a standard tox screen on them. You'll have to actually be able to like there's a lot of crap that's going to go into it, right? If we actually get that confirmed that it happened, there's still going to be people that are going to say it's a false flag attack, that Ukraine did this to their very own people in order to freaking, you know, push the US or the UN or the EU or freaking NATO right, into attacking Russia. I think if that happens, the negotiations are off the table. I think this is the most likely, most probable course of action that would take if that ends up getting sustained. The negotiations are off the table. I would see Trump fully funding Ukraine, as promised, and Russia's supply lines getting severely damaged. That way we're taking out Russia's ability to fight the war while funding Ukraine's ability to fight the war. So not that we're not already doing that, but I think it's going to be much more significant than where it's at. And we're just going to have to kind of wait and see to see what those different things are going to be. There is the possibility that NATO decides to intervene. There is the possibility that the UN decides to intervene. There's all sorts of possibilities that go into it. But I would find that the most likely course of action, though.
Would the world court then go after them?
They already have.
Or...
And that's just what I mean, they already have. But good luck capturing Putin.
Yeah.
If I remember right, Putin's already like been like, let me go double check. One sec. I believe I've actually already heard that. While we're waiting on that, yes. Jacob Hearn came in. He said, finally caught you live. Unfortunately, I'm at work. Thanks for the content. Much love, brother. Thank you, Jacob. Greatly appreciate your donation, man. Really, really do.
If I randomly go on mute, it's because my toddler is right next to me screaming.
Yep. All right. So March 17th, 2023 by the ICC. So March 17th, 2023, charges war crimes related to the unlawful deportation and transfer of Ukrainian children from occupied territories. The warrant ended up getting issued in connection with Russia's actions during its invasion of Ukraine. So, yeah, ICC already put out a warrant for him. So we just have another one.
Okay.
I mean, but again, you know, those things hold what weight? Yeah. Unless you can get your hands on him, right? Because Putin, yeah. It's been 2 years now, and Putin's still off doing what he's doing. So even if they say, hey, that's a war crime, you freaking, you know, use WMDs. They're not going to give a shit.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't think they're going to care. I really don't. So it's, I don't want to say this. It's a sad, but likely true statement. But yeah. We're also seeing more.
It's really jacked up.
Yeah. Well, let's see here. Let's bring up another one. Let's bring up Netanyahu, right? November 21, 2024, ICC ended up issuing a warrant. Starvation of civilians is a method of warfare, murder, persecution, and other inhumane acts. So at the same time, we're worried about the international court. Like, I know a lot of that crap is bullshit, and it doesn't pass, like, the best scrutiny ever, right? It doesn't. Nor does Israel listen to the ICC. ICC, like we look at, and people try to use it as like some sort of a talking point that, well, hey, the ICC said this or the ICC said that. It doesn't really matter at the end of the day. Unless they can get their hands on these people, which good luck. I mean, you're talking about world leaders, country leaders, everything else. And also there is a lot of like nations that are in the ICC that are represented in the ICC that I don't necessarily like. Texas, what's up, bud? What have you heard out of sheer curiosity?
Show you. I asked the guys that I know that are working that direction. Mm-hmm. And specifically the type of work they do. Mm-hmm. They would definitely know. I haven't gotten a response. I'm assuming they're in position, so I didn't right. get like a full conversation going, but like I said, as soon as I get an answer from them, I'll let you know. I mean, I'm gonna be fair with you, there's been more than once
Thousands.
I can personally tell you.
Thousands,
that,
man.
That
thousands.
They use gas. They've Pickering. Used gas before. I mean, they've used even worse than just like riot tear gas. They've used worse than that too, but on a very small scale, small units trying to flush out like very dug in trenches. So yep. Like they would do multiple like regular artillery and grad assaults, FPV assaults on that position, and they see they cannot flood them out because they're so well dug in or whatever. They yep. would use something like that on smaller scales, and it's hard to document because correct. Like. Mostly, they don't leave any residue of it. Yes, there's canisters that have been found on positions and stuff like that. But most of the instances, it's in a very hot part of the battlefield. Mm-hmm. And most of the instances, it's so hot that nobody's going to go and verify anything over there.
Exactly.
So,
and the location
really
I heard of...
A photo of a
the location where I heard it taking place, absolutely the UN's not going to be able to get there. NATO's not going to be able to get there. And other than photos of the wounds, which hopefully I get here in a little bit today, waiting on them, photos of those wounds will be massive, right? Also like the proper documentation. But the question is that something that Ukraine would even be interested in documenting?
Speaking of an answer, I got a response. I'll just send it to you in a message.
Yeah, I guess I'll wait to read your message until I tell you about the word that I got yesterday as all of this was freaking unfolding.
Yeah, I just sent it to you.
Yeah, I mean, again, you're talking about a very small scale, right? I heard that it was two people that ended up getting killed from it with multiple wounded, right? Like up to like a dozen, something around there. So about a squad size element that ended up getting targeted with this shit. And looking at the area where they were at, what I know about the situation, like you said, it's small. And so it's not going to be a very large freaking documented thing as you just described. If they ended up doing it to like hundreds of troops across the front line, that'd be totally different. That'd be much harder to keep contained. But when it's something small like that, and just as you had stated that this has happened before, right, that you are well aware of that it's happened before. If we start seeing this on a much larger scale, if we start seeing Russia do this on a much larger scale, that to me is the sign that everything that's happening overseas and everything else is taking place. So if we get more reports of it today and more isolated instances across the front line, that likely means that Russia ended up deploying this munition and told them to use it. You know what I mean?
You want to know what a small world means? This guy that I just shared the screenshot of with you, he went through your Q course here.
Oh, really?
No, I mean, I don't think it was in the same year that you were here. I think it was he went through the Q course after you established it. But he's now he's an officer, but in nice. SSO. So
yeah, nice.
Well, he went through that Q course. We spoke about that a while ago.
Yeah, tell him I said what's up. I don't know. Maybe he did. Maybe I don't know. But yeah, dude, it's a very small world, very very small world.
Yeah. I mean, look at the name. You probably can translate that into Ukrainian, and then you'll see.
Yeah.
Probably know it.
If I could remember half of them.
Yeah, but so this thing about the gas, again, like I said, it's a very real possibility that somebody that has, that you're in contact with, or somebody that knows somebody that's in contact with you, happened to be one of these smaller groups that came across it, correct. And they got the information to you. So... versus, hey, I just randomly heard it and it's happening on a mass scale. I can tell you that they started again bombarding like today, mid broad daylight. They were smacking Kharkiv. They continue with the double tap. Like, and this is a big problem because you can't tell first responders, oh, wait 45 minutes before you rush into a impact site.
Right.
Because there's going to be another hit right as you're there if you don't wait 45 minutes, because they do that. Today you have a clear footage of a drone hitting an intersection in some buildings, Shahid. You see the footage of the smoke from the existing impact. You hear the sirens in the background. People are running and doing all this thing. And like while all this is going on, you have another Shahid coming in and impacting the exact same site. So they double tap. They try to get as many as civilians and volunteers and this as they can, which is ridiculous. But yeah, they've been smacking Kharkiv, Odessa pretty hard in the last 2 days, or I would say throughout this very peaceful ceasefire.
Right. It's a peaceful ceasefire, right? The ceasefire.
The first night it was announced, I was tracking. There was not a single air alert. But the next morning it started again. There was like shelling here, air threat there. Mm-hmm. And then you have Shahids again all over hitting. So.
Right. And what I ended up hearing coming out of the Easter ceasefire was how Russian troops were moving everything into position to prepare for an attack. Like they were taking advantage. They were saying that they were going out to essentially what I would call like the DMZ, trying to recover bodies and things of that nature.
I spoke to the boys at the 25th from the drone unit. So they didn't really allow them to do stuff like that. Well, they did remove a lot of bodies and they did resupply some positions with like ammo and water. You could see mostly like water, like they would bring crates of water. Mm-hmm. But they couldn't move heavy. Ukraine wouldn't allow them to move any heavy armor or anything. Like both sides didn't. Like as far as what I was told is there were still FPVs flying. They just didn't do any assault pushes with like heavy armor or any vehicles. So there was nothing like that coming out, videos of like a column of tanks or BTRs getting smacked, because they didn't do that. But they did still operations on the front, like on a smaller scale, were continuing. It's hard to like, how long is the battlefield? Like the front line is a very, very long. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's in an isolated area. It's a very stretched front line. Right. It's hard for somebody to put out a command and say, everybody stop shooting. And the message gets to everybody in every position, in every foxhole, everywhere around the front line instantly. It doesn't really happen. So there's obviously some fighting happening some places, but for the most part, like I was told, any of the assaults did stop. Right. Again.
Yeah, the assaults. I don't know. Assaults stop, but Russians doing shady stuff that they shouldn't be doing throughout the ceasefire absolutely continued on. And
Russians are always going to be doing shady stuff. It's what Russia does. So
yeah. How do you feel about the impacts of what's taking place on the global scale on the front line?
Man, I think that there's a lot of like we spoke about this, I think, offline as well. There's a lot of chess being played here with multiple big players involved. And yes, a lot of people need to understand that there's all of it, or most of it for the most part, including the hostile cooking off between China and the US, and you have Iran and all of this. It's interlinked. It's all somehow interlinked. It's like this nest of like absolute crap. And it's like you can't just like stop Iran and then hope that it'll stop everything else. You can't just stop Russia. I think that the world needs to get together and just tell these five players that you either stop playing this side of the game or they actually start playing. Mm-hmm. And they don't have a chance. If allies come together and say enough of this shit, you think China, Iran, and Russia and North Korea have a chance to do anything? They don't. But for some reason, we're still playing this game where we're worried about a signal chat or something else rather than worrying about like what's the plan of what are we actually doing. Like on a second note, good news for Ukraine side. Ukraine has received their first AWACS aircraft.
Awesome.
And they are not, yesterday that was the most tracked flight on the internet. They flew the plane for a few hours. They shaped it as like a little person over Lviv, the flight tracking. And then they, the call sign of that flight was welcome.
Yeah.
How did we feel? That was pretty cool. So we feel very great about that.
Yeah.
Because what that does, and most people don't understand, it might not be a big AWACS like the United States has and something like that. It has a, as a shorter range of what a larger
radar. You don't need a big one over there.
That's what I'm saying. 400, 500 kilometer range that this is publicly known to have, which we, I just gave you that fingers because I think it's a little bit larger than that. That range, if you want to track the distance from Lviv all the way out to the Black Sea, and then if you want to track the distance from like mid Ukraine area, like that thing at flying at that altitude right. can see everything around that it needs to see, especially for early warning stuff that they didn't have access to utilize in their F-16s. Meaning, they get intel shared, but intel, obviously, when it's coming, when it's a shared intel without actual on-the-ground team from the U.S. in Ukraine, that takes time. Most of that intel is good for, like, hey, there's a buildup of two brigades happening here, or hey, they just launched MiG-31s with hypersonics on there. But what the F-16s didn't have is utilizing on the in the air radar controls control for like guiding them into munitions that they were taking out. They had to manually find them first, track mm-hmm. them, and get the call and fly to that area. And communication with early warning of other aircraft as well while doing operations. Having this and knowing that there's more than one coming and knowing this is the type of aircraft that they can be so far away from the front and it'll be so hard for that to get hit that I think that's, yeah, there you go. That's exactly how it looks. That's a beautiful plane.
Yeah, I found it, finally.
That yep. That is a very, very beautiful plane. Cause,
and it's French. Ended up having the French, right?
Sweden.
Sweden, okay.
It came from Sweden. I think French is gonna give the second one. I believe okay. It's Saab. It's a Saab built.
Oh yeah, that'd AWACS be sweet. System. Yeah, that makes yep Saab. Yep, 340 AWACS. Yep, I used to freaking drive one of those things, man. Plane. Awesome freaking like I'm really upset they stopped making vehicles, but yeah, at least over here in the States.
Yeah, they're busy making weapons.
Yeah, good on them. Good on them. Yeah. But I mean. Impact on the front line.
That is really great for. That's going to make a huge difference. Not as far as the front line. I'm talking about. It's going to give the capabilities. It's going to advance Ukraine's capabilities by doing combined arm stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to advance that capability itself because this command and control can now communicate with any Western equipment that has been sent to Ukraine already. Between anything that has from HIMARS launchers to Patriot batteries air defense to IRIS-T air defense to F-16s, all of that can now communicate with this AWACS without having to make any modifications, without having to go through any steps of integrating it. It's not some old Soviet equipment that you have to integrate with Western. So now everything that the Ukraine has already gotten until today, they mm-hmm. can now start utilizing with a much greater integration and having a command and control for it. I think within the next 6 months, especially if some more Western equipment will show up, from Europe and the UK, mm-hmm. like there's talks of now Germany finally breaking on the Taurus cruise missiles and all of these things. If over the next 6 months all of these things are happening, I think there's going to be some massive changes in the things that we'll see on what Ukraine is doing and how they're utilizing stuff. It's the little things. People don't understand. It's like, yeah, you can have a coffee, you can have water, you can have sugar, but if you put them all together in a cup with some milk and you shake it up really well, it's going to be a nice coffee. But if you have it all separate, it's just going to be individual things. That's how I see with Western equipment, with certain stuff like an AWACS, giving them the capability of integrating it. They don't need to wait for a NATO AWACS aircraft to transmit to them what they do want or what they don't want to tell them. We do know that the West has been providing Ukraine with AWACS capability, like in the instant when they sunk the Moskva cruiser. We know that they have gotten grid coordinates and stuff like that from an AWACS. Nobody knows exactly whose it was, but now if Ukraine has their own, there's nobody's fault other than theirs, you know? Now, any information could theoretically come from their own AWACS, so... I don't know, I see it as a very big thing. People don't, but like not many people do because people don't understand. Oh, people don't understand the capability of that aircraft.
No, and obviously it's huge. I've also heard other reports about new equipment and things like that that are still flowing into Ukraine, like U.S. supplied equipment that is making its way in there still. And people are like, "What the hell? I thought this stuff was supposed to be over." And I'm like, "That's the exact
drawdown." Like from the last packages, like these things take time and months to first get replaced, then get sent and all that.
I think what's happening is you have like new efforts to start ramping those things back up based on the assessments of how much money we actually spent over there. And so now those new orders and all of that crap has to work its way through the system to start making it over, because we had started that drawdown. So I think you're going to continue to see like little influxes. And then here in the near term, especially with Putin playing the games that he did yesterday, and kind of the way negotiations are looking, I would expect that those things end up ramping up. That's what
just,
I think.
I just don't know. I'm just really scared with this whole negotiation. I mean, not scared, but I'm like more worried in the negotiation side of things when it comes to this, because the Ukrainian, government on the presidential side, let's put it this way, bipartisan on all parties, have made it clear there's nothing on a deal that Ukraine is going to officially recognize another part of Ukraine as being Russian. And they made it very clear on bipartisan, on all, on even the opposite side of Zelensky, even that lady and the guy, both of them that like don't really like Zelensky, that was a bipartisan vote, and it's also a bipartisan to keep martial law and not do an election right now. Like, there was, I think it was 61-0, or 64-0 vote, something like that. And so far, I haven't seen one document or one sort of, like, idea of what a peace deal or any sort of deal is laid out that doesn't include that Ukraine is officially going to recognize at least Crimea as Russian.
Right. They have to give something in return. And that's the problem. Is like in order.
So, and I don't see them doing that.
No, like, neither do I. Don't see... and, but you got to understand, if they don't put something on the table, then they're not taking part. I also don't see, so if Zelensky was actually being smart about it, he could be like, yeah, you guys have had it for 10 years. I'll give up Crimea, but you're pulling out of everything else.
Yeah, but Putin but wouldn't the biggest go for problem it.
So
is,
it's what can he bring to the negotiating table? Because but if the Zelensky, problem is Zelensky, the problem is that Zelensky is the first one. The problem is Zelensky is the first one that is being given the opportunity to propose an offer to go to Russia. So Zelensky has to propose something, like you just said. He has to give something up for friggin' Russia. I don't think Russia's going to take it regardless.
But Zelensky has this message that he's been, and the Ukrainian people are standing behind the message. It's like, who is Zelensky to decide what people become now Russian officially, like, because I'm gonna just give Russia this land. So those are people's decision, and it's a very good argument as if you want to be from a moral side, but in the other side of the whole, the same, like if you look at it from the other opposite side, it's like what do you do about this? Like, the people are not gonna go with it, the government is not gonna go with it, they're gonna come to the table and say, we have a deal for Russia. If they leave Ukraine, we won't continue to smack them in the teeth on every refinery and everything that they build. They're gonna come and do that, and that's something that we both know that the, like, in the end of the day, if Russia hasn't broken Ukraine 3 years into this war, We all know Eurocom four-star general sat in front of Senate and stated this out loud for the whole world to hear. There's no path that immediately can drive in any, like, scenario, Russia to just cruise over Ukraine. So Ukraine doesn't have, they're not in a position right now where any of the front line is, like, an imminent, like, it's capable to imminently, like, if Russia just does this one thing, the front line just collapses and Russia, it starts rolling through. There's nothing in Russia's playbook right now that they can do to Ukraine. Ukraine has, right now, the front line so very well defensive dug in on both sides that it's a stalemate. We both know that. It's like, it's not going here or there. Right. So just to come to the table and say, okay, we're going to end the war, we're going to let you keep what you have, there's nobody in Ukraine or in the Ukrainian government that's going to be like, yeah, sure, we'll do that for the United States.
I would agree. I would agree with that statement, right? But you ask, like, who is he to make that call? Well, he's the freaking president of Ukraine, and he's got the ability to sit down with, like, parliament and be like, yo, this is what I'm doing. I think we all know that he's not going to do it. It's a strategic, it's a chess move in order to get freaking, it's a chess move in order to kind of catch Putin and to get the support and whatnot that we need. And I think people would understand that. It is a gamble for damn sure, but it's, if you study Putin and you know what the hell he's after, it's not, it's really not. Andreas, Andreas ended up coming in, gifting out 10 bucks. And he said, just got a 95 on my NYPD exam. On my way to becoming one of NYPD's finest. Congratulations, brother. And I played that video just for you. Go ahead. Go ahead, Texas. Sorry.
Talk to me. Well, congratulations to Andreas. NYPD's, I grew up in New York City. So, yeah, got family in the NYPD. So, you're in good hands as long as you don't get to work in the Bronx. Other than that, what I'm saying is I don't think that Putin can even accept that, because in Putin's eyes, according to Putin's message to the Russian people, all of that is already Russia. Like, that's already Russia. So he can't go to the table and say, we won the war by Ukraine agreeing that this is Russia. Because in his eyes, it's already Russia. Like, they already made the memorandum.
I'm well aware. And that's why I'm saying it's not a gamble for Zelensky to state that. So, have you seen, we can go back and forth on it. Yeah, I mean, we can go back and forth on it, but Zelensky has to give something up if he wants support. It's a fact. Like, he has to give something up if he wants support. It's a fact. Otherwise,
Putin,
and that's...
Or Putin just needs to drive Trump right into the, like drive him so crazy that he's just going to snap.
But again, Zelensky is the one that has to go first. And Putin knows this. And so Putin's just sitting back, dicking around. It's a what if game to a million other, but the fact is that Zelensky by the end of the week is going to have to end up coming up with something that he's willing to freaking give up. And that's got to go to freaking Putin to turn down in order to get the U.S. support. That's it. It's a good chess move by Putin, because Putin's in a horrible spot right now. Horrible. Economically, he's being freaking strained, right? And his supply chain is about to get cut down drastically. And while he's being strained economically, the cost of the goods that he needs in order to keep his war machine running over inside China had just been are about to start freaking skyrocketing because of the sanctions that Trump put on him. It was really smart. So now Putin's got to look at it and he's got to go, okay, what can I do? Well, I can force Zelensky to give something up, which he likely won't do, which means they're going to lose all the support from the United States, and then I can do whatever the hell I want. It's a chess move.
Enough. We'll see.
It was a smart move by Putin. You got to give him credit. It was a smart move.
Yeah, but he did that every time. He did that with the first ceasefire in the sea and the air. He's like, okay, we'll do a ceasefire in the sea and in the air, and then he said, or infrastructure and in the Black Sea, and then he said, Ukraine agreed to it, and then he came back and said, we'll agree to it if the U.S. stops intelligence sharing. So they're like, hey, well, we didn't talk about that. Then they're like, okay, let's do a 30-day ceasefire. Ukraine agreed to it, and then Rush came back, we'll agree to it if Ukraine announces that they stop recruitment and they stop weapons shipments from the West into Ukraine. Yeah. They do that every time. When they came, they said, okay, let's do that. And then when Ukraine agrees to it, they pull something out and they ask for something more. And I think that's the same thing that's happening here. Again, we're at the point where we're just going to have to watch and see.
Well, this actually came out not that long ago. Did you see the strike that took place over outside Moscow? This ammunition plant just ended up going down. Allegedly over 100,000 pounds. I believe it was 100,000 pounds. Let me double check this. Allegedly it was 100,000 tons of munitions. Excuse me, 100,000 tons. I wish they would have waited for that freaking shock to come through on that video, but that's another massive freaking blow to Russian freaking supplies. That is huge. It's a huge blow to the Russian supply system. After we saw the cruise missiles get targeted a couple of weeks ago, now we're knocking out this big massive one as well. All of this shit matters. And if Zelensky wants to win, I promise you, intel sharing definitely became a part of this freaking strike in order to make it happen in one way or another. And these are the things that Zelensky has to weigh out. Like, you want massive strikes like this to continue? If you want to, like, beat Russia? And I have no doubt that there's a lot of people that are, like, trying to help him out with this entire process. But what's taking place on the world stage, I'm going to put it this way. I think the U.S. is well aware of what Putin's up to. And I say that just through analytical data when I look at this, right? Like, we're all looking at it like Trump just doesn't want to support Ukraine. I don't think that's necessarily true, because now Trump's well aware that we have a common enemy. Not that he didn't think Russia was an enemy before, but I don't think they realized the amount of shit that they were attempting to do. Trump's not an idiot. U.S. dollar matters. And they're going after the U.S. dollar. And so he's got to figure out a way to make sure that that dollar stays safe. And the way that that dollar stays safe is by essentially destabilizing Russia again. The way that we do that is through joining them in the war. I mean, that's really it. There's a lot of other things that we can do. We can talk about how, psychologically we could, push the stressors even further by breaking up his relationship with Xi Jinping. Right. But none of that's going to matter if we end up pulling out. We got to do it. I think that, right, because then at that point, then the U.S. dollar is screwed. And so having Ukraine being supported is 100% in the U.S.'s best financial interest at this point. While we might have dumbass representatives that are out there saying otherwise about not just Ukraine, but also the Middle East, I want to know who's actually advising these people and who's actually talking to them before they make these stupid ass statements. And I think they get a lot of their information. A lot of these reps, in my opinion, end up getting a lot of their information from freaking social media posts. And they don't really have a wide access to the type of crap that we've talked about. They don't have as enough time in their day to be able to do that stuff. So we got to figure it out, man. I'm out of time though, brother. I appreciate you coming in. Brian, closing thoughts? And we'll talk offline, Texas.
No, not really. Not today.
Not really? Okay. What'd you say, Texas?
I was going to say, like, the real closing thoughts is, like, we just got to keep doing what we're doing and just wait and see. Like, we can all guesstimate, but it's going to be really soon that they're doing these talks and whatnot. So we'll just have to wait and see what they say.
Yeah, and that's basically what I did, was guesstimated, you know? Like, all I can do is provide my best guess on this one.
About, what do you say about Trump's posting about the Pope's funeral, like inviting himself to the funeral? Be like, I'll definitely be there. It would be a great pleasure. Like,
what do I think about that? I think it's a political move, like, because he got hit up really hard for not wishing everybody a happy Easter, but ended up, what the heck was it? Yom Kippur? I'm sorry.
Passover.
Yeah, Passover. Wishing everybody a happy Passover. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Anyways, I'm going to let you go, and we'll talk.
All right, brother, man. I'll talk to you later.
Later.
All right. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining me for another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. Yep, I'll be live again this evening, 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. And then tomorrow morning, I'm going to end up running an early show because I'm going to be on I-24 English and I-24 French. So all of that, I got to be offline at 09:30. So that means at a minimum, I need to start at 08:30 tomorrow morning, depending on what's coming out. So we'll have that show running about 30 minutes early tomorrow morning. I look forward to seeing you guys.